Hi, thank you so much for joining us today for the telephone town hall with Population Services International. My name is Karen Summer-Shallet, and I will be your moderator today. I'm the Deputy Director of External Relations and Communications for PSI, having formerly spent about 15 years as a journalist. And of course, like many of you, a self-avowed feminist and fighter for women's and girls' rights. So PSI for me is a very exciting place to be, given all the dignity that we use to look at our consumers and how do we address their needs. And I'm with someone today, Manya Dotson, the director of Adolescent 360, who has really began her career using that lens. And her first big girl job, as she likes to say, or grown-up job, as a writer for 17 Magazine, tackling a topic dear to many of us, sex in your body. She then went on to focus in the NGO world on women and girls, rights and dignity, and making sure that our consumers have control in their own hands. And so today she's going to talk to us a little bit about her most current adventure into Adolescent 360 and what that means for PSI and the developing world as the program itself gets replicated. And so we're very excited to have you here, Manya. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Karen. It's such a pleasure to be here and such a privilege to be able to share some of the work and some of the kind of insider perspective of what's going on in the field with all of you today. So thank you so much.
So I want to remind everyone that we will be taking questions. If you have something you'd like to ask, please make sure to press zero at any time during the call, and you'll be connected with one of our operators. You'll be hearing that quite a bit because we really want to encourage your participation. So here's an opportunity for you to participate. We would love to take a poll from everyone on the line so that we can better share information with you, and you can participate simply by using your telephone keypad. If you can please answer the question, how familiar are you with the term human-centered design? So you will press number one for very familiar, number two for familiar, number three for not familiar, and press four for I'm not sure. I'll repeat that once more. The question is, how familiar are you with the term human-centered design? Please press one for very familiar, two for familiar, three, not familiar, and four, not sure. Great. It looks like we have some folks here who are familiar with human-centered design, but perhaps don't feel the expertise that they would be able to go and create a project on their own, which is why we have Manya here to share with us exactly how she's doing it. So I of course gave a summary introduction for Manya, but I would love to hear from her to give a little bit of background about really who you are, what you're doing, and why.
Thanks so much, Karen. So again, my name is Manya Dotson. Manya is a difficult name. It's kind of like Tanya with an M. And in East Africa, it means I am with the people, which I really love. It also, in French, means a small biting ant, which I don't love so much. But it's such a pleasure to be here. I am the director of Adolescence 360, which is a large investment from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the Children's Investment Fund Foundation. The goal of this investment is to revolutionize the way that we offer services to adolescent girls, beginning with three countries, Tanzania, Ethiopia, and Nigeria. Those three countries are all very different with very different cultural contexts. And so the real objective is to begin there, see if we can find something that really resonates across those three markets and all of the different kinds of girls that find themselves in those markets, and then use those programs as a springboard to serve girls across Africa and across the world. 360, why 360? There's like, you know, there's all kinds of things that are 360, but I really like it because 360 degrees is one turn of a revolution. And what we are trying to do is no less than create a revolution. And it's really a revolution in listening. a revolution in working together with girls and listening to them in a different way, listening to them in a more meaningful way, and working together with them to really fundamentally change the way that we offer services to adolescent girls and with adolescent girls so that they feel not just that those services are accessible to them geographically and physically, but also that those services feel easy to go to. It feels friendly, that when they arrive there, they feel seen, heard, and understood. You know, I'm so excited about it. I'm excited about working on it in these three contexts, and I'm excited about working on it and finding a way to crack the code so that the learning that we have could be used everywhere, because I honestly don't think that we've really cracked this problem in the United States.
Great. Thank you, Manya. So we brought up in our poll human-centered design, and that concept, we know the three words separately. When they come together, it means a lot of different things to different people, and I'd love to hear how human-centered design played a role in that listening you were talking about, and how you think that might be the tool to this revolution.
Mm-hmm. So just so that you have some context into me and my experience, I've worked in public health programs for about 20 years. So yes, I started at 17 Magazine all those years ago. But since then, I've worked really at all levels of health systems. I've worked on community health programs in rural Ivory Coast. I worked at a rural health facility, a maternity in rural Ivory Coast. I've worked on country-level programs with government, regional programs, multi-country initiatives. And so I'm very familiar with the way that public health programs are often run. And they're thoughtfully done, you know. People aren't like messing about doing silly things. People are really trying to be thoughtful. They do a situational analysis generally. They do some research to figure out what's going on. And people very thoughtfully, experts very thoughtfully sit in conference rooms trying to think of the best way to help people. And they feel deeply connected to that cause. But sometimes I feel like the air conditioning creates a real barrier between those experts around those tables in the conference rooms. Sometimes PowerPoints and graphs and data, they can be very meaningful, but they can also lose somewhere the essence and the empathetic connection with what girls and anyone really who we're working on programs for are dealing with in their everyday lives. And there's a kind of separation that can happen in that expertise where we lose sight of and lose connection with something that's a real fundamental value in public health, which is participation and dignity and equity and equality and empowerment and all of those things. So human-centered design is a tool. It's a tool that's been used in the private sector to help create products and services that really respond to humans and their needs, to make brands really resonant, to make products really responsive. So for us, applying that methodology to public health has really been fun and interesting. It's a creative, so human-centered design is a creative problem-solving process. It encourages teams to consider the user's perspective in a really empathetic way to get inside of the emotional experience of whatever it is that you are designing, and then design a product or service that makes people feel seen, heard, and understood, that delights them, that engages them, and that makes it feel very effortless to meet a health need. So for us, we've worked together in the Adolescence 360 Project with some real design experts who have these kinds of methodologies, who have this kind of mindset at their fingertips, and who have worked very closely with our field team and young people, young designers and young researchers, adolescents that we have brought into the process to be co-designers. We started with all of the research and all of the evidence and all of the rich data that already exists about this issue and these problems, and then said, okay, now let's go deeper. Let's Let's really understand and unpack the emotional landscape around these issues and work from there to design solutions that are more responsive.
So it sounds like we have put a tremendous amount of energy to capturing the input of young girls and women in order to design programs that resonate. But I want to ask you, why young girls and young women in the first place? Why adolescents?
Oh, that's a very big question. It's a question that I could answer with statistics. We, of course, are in a population explosion globally. For economies that are transitioning to more and more capitalistic and more cash-driven economies, having a huge population swell of adolescents entering the workforce, entering the educational system, and ultimately entering the health system is creating the potential for either a crisis or an opportunity, a demographic opportunity, depending upon how that group transitions into adulthood. So, you know, there's lots of great reasons demographically, economically, et cetera. But for me, I think the answer about why this is important to me takes me back to a clinic, that clinic in Ivory Coast, where I was a Peace Corps volunteer and the assistant to a midwife. We worked in a rural health post that had no water and no electricity. And we served a catchment area of about a 25-mile radius around our clinic. And most of the clients who came in to give birth in that clinic were under the age of 19, many of them as young as 14 or 15. They were, many of these girls were from rural, they were all from this rural area, but some were from Guinea and different communities that practice female genital mutilation. They would often arrive at night on the back of a bicycle in full labor, sitting on, you know, an iron rebar bicycle rack. A loving and concerned husband was generally with them, often much older. And I saw those girls struggle through childbirth. And I worked alongside of a midwife as we managed complications, all kinds of complications from those deliveries. And, you know, often the reason they came to our clinic was because we were kind. And we would put a warm towel around their shoulders and help them relax and reassure them it was going to be okay. Inevitably, they would get back on that bicycle within 1 or 2 hours of giving birth. They were needed to go back and take care of their farms and their husbands and their families, which they would start doing right away. If they had any trouble breastfeeding, if they had any trouble with all of the things that motherhood brings, even when you're a 30-year-old mother, much less a 14, 15-year-old mother, all of those things would come crashing down on those girls. And, you know, inevitably, those were the children that would come in with malnourished and undervaccinated and just, you know, the whole family having this start to life, start to a married life, start to a life that was just so much more difficult than it would need to be. So, you know, there's lots of reasons to focus on this issue. For me, it's the faces of Fatima and Lucy and all of those girls whose hands I held in the dark.
Thank you for sharing that. I want to remind everyone, if they have any questions, please press 0, and there will be an operator standing by to take your question to be answered a little bit later in the call. So we talked about why and why girls and adolescent young women. Tell me now what Adolescent 360 is doing using human-centered design to actually provide other options and to really reach young girls and young women where they are.
So young girls, young women, and young men have so many needs. And A360 is very focused on the issue of contraceptives. Contraceptives are, of course, everywhere in the United States, all over the world, are highly controversial for young people. Less so when those young people are married, but even with young married couples, because there is a certain pressure and a certain desire to prove fertility in a marriage. So in general, there can be a lot of barriers for young people. Through our human-centered design process, we spent about a year investigating, getting deep inside the emotional and interpersonal dynamics that are impacting these issues for girls, and then began a series of experiments, of prototypes, if you will. So part of the human-centered design process is about saying, okay, what have we learned that might be different, that might help us to connect and create something that's really delightful and resonant? And then let's try it out and do some, you know, testing with girls in real life circumstances and see how they react. And then we change and update what we're doing along the way. So we've been doing that for about 8 months and have come to some solutions in each of the three countries that have been really interesting. So first of all, we learned some really interesting things. There's a lot that we already knew, but we learned some really interesting things. And some of the things that surprised me after 20 years of working on this were, one, there is a tremendous anxiety around how life is changing and how quickly the economy is changing. And so often in programs about contraceptives or family planning, we assume that the major benefit for people is that you can finish school and reach all your dreams. And girls are like, I'm not, you know, okay, maybe. There's a lot of things that are standing between me and finishing school, and a pregnancy may or may not be one of those. And even if I do finish school, there may or may not be a job waiting for me on the other end of that. On the other hand, motherhood is something that I can see a clear pathway to motherhood. It's really valued in my community, and I will feel valued as when I become a mother, more valued than I feel as an adolescent girl or as an unmarried girl or even as a married woman without children. So that was something that was quite interesting. A second thing that we found was that girls said, I love these two quotes, I'm not sexually active, he's having sex with me. Just think about that for a minute. I'm not sexually active, he's having sex with me. And another one, which was, well, as long as I'm not using contraceptives, I'm okay. I'm not sexually active. So there's, you know, we've been thinking that there's a huge taboo around using contraceptives. But really, the taboo is around having any sort of intentionality around being sexually active. So it's okay that things happen. It's not okay if I'm making things happen. So that was a really interesting insight for us that led us to ask, well, how might we divorce the decision to use contraceptives from the decision to be sexually active? That's really interesting. That's really different than the way that programs have been run so far. And the third thing that we learned, that it actually seems obvious in hindsight, sometimes things that are really true do feel really obvious once you see them. But I don't know if you have any adolescents in your life. These adolescents are quite focused on the immediate decisions, immediate consequence, immediacy. So anytime that we are creating a delay or a gap between getting someone excited about using contraceptives and then actually offering them that service, we've tried in the past to create a strong referral system to help a young person get to a clinic. And what we're seeing is that any delay is a loss of that client, that as soon as their excitement wanes, they are not going to take the effort and the time and face all of the potential stigma in getting themselves to a clinic to make it happen. So three things that we're doing are, one, framing contraceptives as something with an immediate benefit that's going to help you achieve a near-term goal. We are framing it up as a way to think about your financial future and to get excited about your future. Not making sexual activity a part of necessarily of your decision to use contraceptives, but it's more like, hey, you sound like you're a girl with a plan. You know, if you're a girl with a plan, you might want to think about using contraceptives as part of that plan. This is very different than saying, when you become sexually active, start using a contraceptive so that you can finish school and achieve all of your long-term dreams. What we found is that that narrative that has been so fundamental to the way that we have designed programs is really, really irrelevant. And girls were saying, hey, guess what? It's not that, okay, I think contraceptives are irrelevant, potentially dangerous. They might destroy my fertility, which is really important to me, and at odds with my sense of self. I don't see myself as sexually active. I don't see myself as having this need. So it was a really interesting process.
So it reminds me a lot about the video that we sent out prior to the call, the Kuamanja video.
Majaja.
Say it for me.
Kuamajaja, which means be smart. Be smart.
And what struck me about that video was how the girls in it really valued themselves, mm-hmm. and how having a plan and having dreams, right? I'm a girl who dreams, was seen as such a value. I wanted to be one of them. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine that anybody watching that video would want to take that pineapple on their head and want to be one of those girls. Which is a really different way of approaching young women than we've seen before in public health. You may have heard me at the beginning of the call talk about consumers. PSI mm-hmm. does not talk about beneficiaries. We really look at the people that we serve and work with as consumers. So tell me, if you would, since we got to see the video from Tanzania, and we really do understand perhaps how you're framing that idea about a girl with a plan. Tell me, and our friends on the phone, about what you did in Ethiopia mm-hmm. and what your insights led to about financial freedom there.
Yes. Okay. So Ethiopia is such a cool program. First of all, we're working with really, really hard to reach girls, the last mile girls. And just to give you some perspective on this, I went out to do a field visit, and first of all, we flew to Addis, which is a long flight, and then flew another 3 hours upcountry, then drove for an hour and a half on a paved road, then an hour and a half on a dirt road, only to get out of the car and walk 8 miles into this rural health post, which is hard to even describe. They were very proud of it because it had been built by the community for the community, but it was really, you know, a small shack made out of sticks, and on the way in, we saw somebody in labor being taken out on a stretcher, and I knew that they were walking at least 8 miles to the road that we had just come from. So, I mean, these girls are really, really remote. We're working with married couples, young married couples, and what we learned in Ethiopia was that we thought that girls needed to prove their fertility. And so the evidence that was out there was indicating that maybe it wasn't a great idea to try to work with girls right after they get married or when they're engaged, because this cultural imperative is so strong. Now, interestingly, we're finding that the A360 program there is in fact getting around that, and about 50% of the girls who are taking up contraceptives don't have a child yet. Because we did learn through our human-centered design discovery activities that girls and their husbands are really concerned about an economy that's increasingly cash-based. They're asking themselves what it means to live a good life. They have goals about having a small shop or having an onion field. They have some financial goals, and they understand and feel that having smaller families is a pathway to having a better life, a life that's with less hardship and more wealth. And when you talk about wealth in rural Ethiopia, when we said, what does wealth mean? Here, they said a house, a mud house, a cow, and a tree with shade. So you can see how, a traditional kind of family planning messaging that would show
you know, a middle-class family of four with two really, you know, lovely, healthy children, it just might not be a resonant sort of message in this context. We also learned they were super, super concerned and anxious about finances. So we said, well, what if we call Smart Start? What if we frame this all up in some counseling, some financial counseling for a young couple to help them have a conversation with each other about what it is that they might want in their lives, to help them think through the cost of having a baby and think through, you know, what would happen if you had a cow first before having a baby? Oh, well, then I get to have the cow and milk, and I'd have some money that I'm selling from, that I'm getting from the milk that we're selling, and milk to give to the baby. And, you know, so we, Smart Start is framing contraceptive use in terms of financial planning for couples. And what's so wonderful about human-centered design is that, you know, we could have pulled tools from, you know, there's all kinds of financial planning tools or apps or whatever that are out there. But what was really resonant was to talk about how much a baby costs in terms of sacks of grain, in terms of buckets of milk, in terms of bags of kep, which is a local grain. And when they do the simulation of how much a baby costs in those terms, it's like the light bulb goes on, and we are getting, of the girls that we're talking with who are not pregnant already, many of them are pregnant already, actually, when we meet them, about a quarter of them are already pregnant, but we're seeing about 86%. Leave that single interaction deciding to get a contraceptive method and leaving with one that same day.
And that is one of the beauties of these projects. You mentioned that you want to close that gap between the excitement and the implementation of actually getting a contraceptive method. So these events, some of them are at clinics, some of them are pop-ups in various marketplaces, but there's always an opportunity to actually get contraceptive counseling and the contraceptive device itself.
Yeah. And in fact, we've even taken it a step farther, which is, you know, anytime a girl is choosing to go see a provider because she wants contraceptives, she's feeling uncomfortable about that. So we just said, hey, everybody's invited to have a private moment with a provider. We know everybody has questions. And so everyone's going to get to have some time, unless you don't want to, because it's normal to have questions and it's good to have a relationship with a health provider. So we're starting to forge a relationship between providers, between nurses and clinical officers and girls. Whether they want to talk about contraception or not is up to them, but having everybody go makes it, just removes all the stigma from it. And I'll give you an example. Like, imagine that in the United States in ninth grade, imagine if we had a program where as part of your health class, not only did you learn about contraceptives in your health class and made a small plan for your life and thought a little bit about the financial, did a simulation about what a baby might cost. Maybe you take a field trip to the local grocery store and fill up a cart for what 1 week of groceries for a new baby. This is very much what Smart Start is doing. It's leading people through a simulation in terms that are very concrete that they can understand. But then at the end, we said, hey, and part of that class is that every ninth grader is going to have an opt-out 30-minute session with a nurse at some point during the year where they can ask any of the questions that they have about anything that they want. That would be the U.S. equivalent of what we're doing in rural Ethiopia.
Great. And as PSI is looking at Adolescent 360 as a model, this is a great question from Aaliyah in Brooklyn. Before I share the question, I want to remind everyone that they too can provide their own questions for Manya by pressing zero and speaking to the operator. And whether she knew it or not, we actually answered Mary's questions from Washington, D.C., which was already, what does the human-centered design project look like? Can you give some examples? So I think Manya did a great job of that. But I do want to return to Aaliyah in Brooklyn. What are your primary challenges in scaling the success you've seen with A360? How can you make this bigger and more impactful? And before you begin, I do want to share that Adolescent 360 has inspired quite a few programs across PSI, including one that bears out your example in Mozambique, a project called Ignite, when teens were brought to a rally in their school to talk about contraception. They were very excited. What the team learned was that when the nurse's office was down the hall from the rally and around the corner, the teens went to other places in the building. When the nurse's office was right next to the rally, the teens were led there, and they actually, there was quite a bit of contraceptive uptake. So they really had to learn how to close the gap. So how can we use these insights, as Aaliyah asked, and spread them to the places that need the most, perhaps even the U.S.?
It's a great question. We're working on this in lots of different ways. So the first question is, how do we take the fantastic results that we're seeing in the geographic areas that we're working in, how do we take them to scale nationally in Ethiopia, Tanzania, and Nigeria? In all three of those countries, we're working very, very closely with public health officials and the government. And in all three of those markets, and particularly in Ethiopia and Nigeria, the government is providing a great deal of in-kind support and resources. So in Nigeria, this is a partnership between public health clinics and nurses and the A360 project, which is really providing training overlays, communication overlays, and helping reconfigure a system that exists, doing these, I don't know, they're minor, but they're major. They're kind of minor differences in execution that create a really different result. So there's a lot of great collaboration that's happening there that is giving us the space to prove that it works in these districts where we're doing the work, and then creating a halo effect where those districts become points of reference for other public health districts. So that's what we're doing in Nigeria. Ethiopia, the whole program is done in very close collaboration with their very successful community health extension worker program. Again, Adolescence 360 is offering this overlay, a different way of executing. And so it's really a transfer of the behavior around how the service is offered that's changing the system and really transforming the system in the long term. Tanzania, our strategy is a little different. Tanzania is getting incredible volume. They're doing a model that's kind of a hub and spoke, where they have a public health facility with trained providers that are chosen by girls. And then from that base, imagine kind of the petals of a flower where they're going out and doing pop-up events all around that facility, but then girls can get to the main facility for follow-up services if they need them, in a kind of hub and spoke model. There, we're seeing such incredibly high volume that it's creating a very compelling investment case for, we're looking there for some of the larger bilateral donors like USAID, DFID, DFID, which is the UK government assistance program, to potentially work together and scale those up. You know, the funny thing about adolescents is they don't have a lot of money laying around. They don't. If they've got a little bit of money laying around, and if they're in a crisis, they will find the money for a crisis. You don't always want to know the things that they have done to find that money. And we don't want those sorts of things to get the kind of money that they need to get a fully unsubsidized service. So there is, with adolescents, there always is some level of support, some level of subsidy that generally makes these services more accessible to girls. And that is one of our challenges is, you know, how do we support adolescent girls? How do we support, they are vulnerable because they are economically vulnerable. They are vulnerable because they need a little bit of help. They crave adult help, adult assistance. They want to know that someone believes in them. Something that I really love about the A360 programs, all three of them, is that when girls interact with our program, they leave feeling like they're valuable. They're like, this is valuable. Somebody has, the care that someone has taken to hear me and see me makes me feel valuable. And because I feel valuable, I feel like I have a future. And when, you know, when they know that these are services that cost money, and when we invest in those services and invest in girls, what we're communicating to them is that you're valuable. And that feeling of being valuable translates into all kinds of things for them and their children in the future. But, you know, beyond that, we are sharing what we've learned in A360 really widely. We're sharing it with pharmaceutical companies. We're sharing it with really everyone who will listen. And, you know, my dream is that anyone who's doing any work with adolescents, if there is something to learn from A360, if there's some small nugget that you can take that would make your program better, please take it. And, you know, perhaps that's just asking yourself the question, you know, it's remembering when I was an adolescent and remembering what that felt like and remembering how hard it was to go places and find your way somewhere and make difficult decisions. And if it's just as simple as remembering and approaching adolescence, not just with the sense of like, well, this is what's good for you, and if you would just listen to what's good for you, then you would do what's good for you. Well, I mean, how many of us really resonated, you know, how that didn't really work so well for me. I don't know how it worked for you, but, you know, just to remind ourselves of how challenging it is to be an adolescent and to put ourselves in their shoes as we're thinking about how to work together. Even that would be an improvement over a lot of the very well-intentioned things that we're doing with limited success.
Well, we have a lot of people on the call to thank, actually, for supporting that investment case that you just made so well, investing in a girl's dignity and making sure she feels valued, as philanthropy has a direct connection to exactly that. I wanted to share a question from Usman. You mentioned your work in Nigeria, and Usman brings up the fact that the Muslim communities in northern Nigeria, where both Christian and Muslim are the majority religions, how are you addressing this need through a lens that might already be predisposed to be against this kind of intervention?
Yeah, Usman, that's such a great question. And I'm so excited about what's happening in northern Nigeria. And actually, in parts of rural Ethiopia, there's a similar situation where there are communities that the religious norms of those communities are not generally supportive of contraceptive use. So in northern Nigeria, we're working primarily with young married couples, again, young married girls. There they've asked, in Nigeria, they've asked to have a special and safe place that their husbands are not a part of, a place where they can go and find camaraderie and conversation that their husbands are not a part of. And so we've listened to girls, and what we're working with there is young mothers groups. So there are lots of savings circles and different ways that married women find community and find ways to support one another that are already a part of the culture in northern Nigeria and Ethiopia. But what we're seeing is that younger wives and are not really an integral part of those. They're not leaders of those women's groups. They're often marginalized within those women's groups. And so they're not finding the same sort of support and camaraderie. So we're saying, hey, can we help those girls have their own young mothers groups? And in those young mothers groups or young married women's groups, not all of them are mothers, and have a conversation again about wealth. Interestingly, this theme about changing economies, cash-based competitive economies, and what it means to be to have a good life was really cross-cutting across all of our three intervention countries. So there's a conversation about finance. There's some tools to think about what you want. The girls are really excited to think that, you know, they have this feeling that once you're married, that your trajectory is really fixed, that your life is planned out for you, and that now there's a series of roles and steps that you fall into kind of automatically. And for them, this idea that, wait, I could still have some money of my own. I can still be the author of my life within this circumstance is really exciting for them. And we are working together with religious leaders in those communities. It's funny. A lot of them say, look, I can't preach this from the pulpit, or I can't speak openly and promote this openly in the mosque. And we say, that's okay. Is this something that you can believe in, helping young couples get a good start to their life? And when those leaders put themselves in an empathetic, when they empathize and remember that part of their own lives and the pressures that they felt, many, many of them will say, you know what? Okay, I'm not going to preach from the pulpit, but I'm not going to be a barrier either. I'm not going to speak out against this. Also, Population Council has done some really, really wonderful work with Muslim leaders, putting together a whole set of materials that helps religious leaders find religious justification and space within the religious tradition to endorse or at least not be a barrier to family planning. And a lot of that is around the responsibilities for care of children and creating a good life within families. So those are some of the techniques that we're using.
And in another project inspired largely by Adolescent 360 that PSI works in, we also are finding that clerics and imams are reminding some of their flock about what the Quran says about responsibility to be a good provider and what that message means when it comes to birth spacing and making sure that you can provide for the children that you have. And I know from Christian religions as well, sometimes those messages are really around the value of life and framing it in the value of the life of the mother and understanding that losing a mother from having repeated pregnancies and deliveries can be incredibly tragic for an entire family and community. So certainly it's that listening, going back to that listening of what does the community value and how do we inject dignity into those conversations.
Yeah, and just one other thing on that. A lot of communities and girls are really, really concerned that contraceptives cause infertility. And there's not just concern, there's like a belief. They cause infertility. And when we talk about contraceptives, we often really emphasize their efficacy, how effective they are. And just imagine, like, you're a young person. You know that you definitely want to have children, and not like 10 years from now, pretty soon, you see this in your near future, and you see this as a really reliable pathway to meaning and value and happiness in your community, and somebody says, hey, well, just get this thing in, and it's super, super effective, and it'll last for 10 years. And you're like, what? That definitely causes infertility, right? So a lot of what we're working with at the community level, even beyond these, you know, religious barriers or concerns about promoting immorality and that kind of thing, is this really fundamental fear of not being able to fulfill a destiny that almost everybody really has in these communities, which is to have a family and to be a mother someday. So that's really a very salient concern. I think we're almost
out of time. Yes, Manya, thank you so much for joining our audience today to talk about Adolescent 360, human-centered design, the dignity of doing this work. And it's so vital as the philanthropy that comes from our supporters goes directly to not only solving a demographic issue as we see this youth bulge, but really down to the personal level of a girl feeling as though not only she's valued, but valuing her own future. And so thank you for sharing this with us. Thank you to those on the call who have contributed to exactly this work and to work like it throughout PSI. We are so grateful for your donations and your support. We will be sending out a survey regarding this call and any future follow-up, as well as the recording from this call. If you want to share it with friends and other folks that you think might be interested in human-centered design or adolescent girls, PSI at large, thank you for joining the call. And we want to make sure that we are doing all that we can to ensure that we're staying on the leading edge of innovation. So if you are moved to continue this work, help us continue this work, please consider making an investment. And you can do that really easily at psi.org. So thank you again for spending the hour with us. And we look forward to continuing our relationship and being in touch in the future.
Thank you so much.